change of pace. I'll check back when I can. I hope you understand that if I don't answer right away, it's not because I don't want to. Thanks again for the photo. Damn, again. Take care, Gina. Meg read it again. Conflicting emotions chased each other through her heart. She thought about the dream she'd had the night before, and the memory sent a hot current down her thighs. She studied Gina's message, trying to read between the lines, and a twinge of disappointment, but also relief, settled in her chest. Gina was engaging in a working-it-out session. Had to be. She was working something out. Meg wasn't sure what exactly it was, but it had something to do with her, and Gina was putting her thoughts out there and testing the waters to see where Meg might stand. She typed a reply. Hey, well, hell, thanks for making me feel like I'm aging gracefully. I know what you mean about dreams, she stopped. If you only knew the one I just had, she started typing again. There have been times I just knew you couldn't be real, but you'd prove me wrong somehow. And even during the difficult times, having something tangible from you or news of you smoothed the ride a bit. I've already started working on my schedule for August. I hope you can work around my schedule. I'm thinking of taking the third weekend off. Let me know if you want to come here or if you want me to go to Sacramento. Plenty of room at the DR if you decide to come out here. I know Dad would love to see you. He thinks you put the shine in the moon. And I'm sure I could persuade Alice to make that chicken chili you like. Yeah, that's right. I'm using bribery. All right, I have to get back to work here. Please be careful out there. Waiting in Wyoming, Meg. She sent it, then finished her salad thinking. Gina wanted Meg as a sounding board, but because she wasn't sure Meg would feel comfortable in that role given their history and the infrequent contact over the years, she was providing breadcrumbs in her messages, references to their pasts and deeper emotional statements. She stood, sad but relieved. There was nothing weird or cosmic going on here. Gina wanted an ear, and she trusted Meg, but she wasn't sure Meg would want to hear it or that she'd be comfortable with it, so she was appealing to their history. For some reason, the fact that Gina still engaged in what Meg had dubbed working it out sessions warmed her heart. Maybe Gina hadn't changed all that much, and maybe they'd finally be able to get past what had happened between them and get close as friends. She opened her office door, thinking again about the dream she'd had the night before, which made her flush. But there was no sense engaging in what-ifs when there weren't any. She shut her office door and went to check on Moonshine. Tuesday was heavier than usual, with a visit to six spreads. But Meg enjoyed the time with ranching families. It was a culture she understood and a language that made sense, especially since she'd had another dream about Gina, this one involving much more skin. Once again, Gina seemed to want to tell her something, but she stopped and slowly undressed Meg in the horse barn. The dream left her aching both between her thighs and behind her ribs. A day on the road dealing with animals, something else she understood, helped put her mind at rest. She got home at 7, and after settling Moonshine for the evening, she caught up on some work she'd brought home. She was in bed by 10. Meg got in a few minutes early on Wednesday, but Ginny was already there. She usually was. Morning, Meg announced.
Morning. Coffee's on in the back.
God love you. Meg went into the back and poured herself a cup. She used creamer in the mini fridge in her office. Michelle poked her head in.
Hey, Doc, got the first room set up for you. The Wolford dogs are getting their shots and a checkup.
Great, thanks. She went back out front. All right, Michelle told me about the Wolfords. What else is going on today that I don't already know about? She set her cup on the counter and started looking at the appointment book, but Ginny covered it with a printout. Meg looked up at her.
That's yours, she said.
Aren't you productive at this hour?
Thanks. A new patient after the Wolfords, just a checkup. Owner just moved to town, wants to establish a veterinary record.
Good for them. Meg appreciated responsible animal owners. Anybody we know?
No, I think she's starting grad school here in the fall.
Cool. Hopefully we won't suck and she'll tell all her friends how awesome it is here at the Laramie Animal Clinic. She glanced through the rest of the list. Not too scary, looks like. Let's hope it stays mellow. She took a sip of coffee. Ginny always made it strong. Meg appreciated that, too. She handed the list back to Ginny,
who put it on a clipboard next to the phone. Christy walked in through the front.
Hi,
she said. Like Sandra, she was perky at this hour. Meg imagined her at home, filling her backpack with extra perky and nibbling on it all day at work. She'd pulled her red hair back into a ponytail, and she wore a pink feminine blouse tucked into khaki trousers. Christy liked pink. The stripes on her sneakers were so pink they almost glowed.
Morning,
Meg said as Christy walked past to the back. She sipped her coffee.
I think I have someone interested in an intern situation with us,
Ginny announced.
Great. One someone or a bunch? One. She's coming by tomorrow at 2 to talk with you. I scheduled it in your book.
Okay, thanks. She picked up the copy of the local paper Ginny always brought in and browsed the headlines.
Haley Roberts,
Ginny said.
Sorry?
Meg looked over at her.
The potential intern. That's her name.
Okay, have you talked to her?
Yes.
Beyond just howdy?
Yes. I have a good feeling about her. Raised on a ranch. The lazy R&T.
Well, that's good enough for me. She's hired. Meg lifted her coffee cup in a salute, and Ginny half laughed, half scoffed.
Let's go through the official motions,
Ginny said. All right, tomorrow, too, gotcha. Meg looked up as Teresa Wolford entered the clinic, two big Rottweilers in tow.
Hi, Teresa, Meg said. Have a seat, we'll be right with you.
Hi, Doc. Coffee'll be ready in a minute,
Ginny told her. She busied herself at the coffee machine in the corner of the lobby opposite the chairs. Christy returned to the front counter.
Hi, Teresa, she said.
Hi, Christy.
Teresa took the chair farthest from the main entrance and got the dogs to sit. Meg went into the back for more coffee. By early afternoon, Meg's patient load dwindled after 2 cancellations. She took the opportunity to get caught up on paperwork and check emails. Official work done, she clicked the email Gina had sent with the photos and opened the picture of her. Again, Meg's heart sped up. She was right back in Saratoga 10 years ago, looking into Gina's eyes for the first time. Love at first sight. No other way to describe it. And then the familiar crush of guilt and remorse replaced that as she thought about letting go 2 years later.
I'm sorry,
she whispered to the photo. Sadness filled her chest, and she tried to remind herself that she'd done it for Gina. That she'd let her go so Gina could spread her wings and become the worldly journalist she needed to be. What could a rancher's daughter sunk boot deep in Wyoming offer someone like that? Everything she was, everything she'd be, was rooted in Western landscapes and the limitations those could impose. She closed the message and thought about August. Could she face Gina again with the knowledge that she might be carrying a torch for her? If she went through with this visit, she'd have to find a way to keep herself under wraps. How awkward would that be if Gina or Sharon picked up on the fact that Meg was mooning after a memory? She needed to get a damn grip. She pushed away from her desk and went out to the front. Ginny was on the phone making an appointment. Meg reached around her and picked up the clipboard with her schedule. She had one more in an hour, though she'd hang out until closing in case an emergency came in. Ginny hung up and looked at her.
Bored?
Never, she smiled.
Too bad. We've got more paperwork to do.
Thanks for thinking of me, but now I have to check on the techs. She retreated into the back where she checked inventory and went over a couple cases with Roy. She worked well with him because he was from a ranching background too and understood the connections people out here made to animals and how they represented both love and livelihood. Her last appointment finished at 5. Randy would arrive around 10, but he and Mark were on call and could take care of anything prior to that. Rick and Kevin were the techs on duty until then, and they were pretty good at assessing a situation. She went into the back to get her things and leave out the back.
I'm out of here, guys,
she said as she left.
Later, Doc,
Rick and Kevin said at once. She pushed through the back door and went to her truck, carrying thoughts of Gina and uncertainty with her. There were a couple months between now and August. Hopefully by then her feelings would have faded, or she'd have a better grip on them. Somehow she doubted it. Chapter 8.
Dr. Tummage?
Meg looked up from the paperwork Jeannie had left out for her before she'd gone to run a quick errand. A young woman stood at the reception counter, worn black cowboy hat in her left hand. She could have been Meg 10 years earlier, right down to the Wranglers and short-sleeved plaid shirt. She held a couple sheets of paper in her other hand, and her arms were tanned a deep brown from long days outside. She wore her brown hair shorter than Meg, and it was plastered against her head from long hours in her hat.
That's me. What's up? I'm Haley Roberts, from the university. Ginny might have said I was from the lazy R&T.
Oh, of course. Hi. Ginny said you'd be coming by about this time. She stepped forward and stuck her right hand out over the counter. Haley shook it.
So you want to be a vet, huh? And you'd like to go to Colorado State when you're done in Laramie?
She nodded.
All right. Come on back to my office and I'll hook you up with some information. Sandra, Ginny should be back in a few minutes. Let her know Haley's here.
Sandra waved in acknowledgement and continued entering data at the computer. Meg motioned Haley around the counter and through the swinging door to the back, then down the cramped corridor that led to her office and Mark's. He was just leaving his.
Hey, Mark, this is Haley Roberts, our potential intern. Haley, this is one of our other vets.
Hi, he said as he extended a beefy hand. Mark Weiland, welcome.
She took his hand.
Thanks.
He looked down at her, smiling beneath his bushy mustache. Mark's been in practice here for over a decade, so he's a great source of info, and he tells good stories.
He rumbled a laugh. You've got some good ones your own self.
He looked at Haley, his brown eyes twinkling. He was what Santa Claus might have looked like if he was in his mid-40s and hadn't grown a beard yet.
Looking forward to having you on board, unless Meg scares you off.
Me? Meg said. It'll be Ginny before me.
Good point. She keeps us all in order,
he said with a conspiratorial tone to Haley before he moved past them. Meg smiled and motioned Haley into her office.
Have a seat.
She sat down behind her desk while Haley sat down opposite her.
I had a folder put aside. Ah.
She handed a blue folder to Haley, who leaned forward to take it with her free hand before she settled back into the chair. She put the papers she brought with her into the folder.
That's info on the program at CSU, Meg continued. I went to vet school there, so I know some folks you can talk to if I'm not the wealth of information you need.
She smiled, trying to put her at ease. There's also some info in this clinic and what we do here.
Thank you. I'm not really sure what specific direction I'll go yet, but I'm for sure set on vet school, and I'd like that to be CSU. I'm hoping I can get Wyoming to sponsor me for in-state tuition.
That's how I did it, through the Wiki program. She pronounced it Wiki.
Yeah, I'd like to stick around here.
Did you grow up at the R&T? She sat back assessing.
Yeah.
She balanced her hat on one knee and opened the folder and looked at the contents, but in a way that suggested she wasn't reading them.
Are you still living there? No, I moved into town to be closer to school.
She looked up, and Meg caught a flash of warning in Haley's eyes, or maybe something closer to secrecy and sadness, something she didn't want to talk about.
That's probably a good decision. So are you leaning primarily large animal? Yes, but I like small animals too. I grew up with a lot of dogs especially.
Why vet school? Haley didn't miss a beat.
I love animals, and out here animals are what we base a lot of our economy on, and I want to help animals if I can. They've helped me plenty.
She dropped her gaze momentarily.
And I'd like to get some practical experience.
That's good enough for me, she stood. When would you like to start your tour of duty here? She looked at her surprised.
Afternoons. I'm taking a couple of classes this summer, but they're in the morning.
So how about tomorrow? You want to put some time in with us? Haley stood as well.
Yes, ma'am. That'd be great.
What time?
I can be here at 1. What should I bring?
A copy of your transcript so I can see what you've been working on. Why don't you try us out for a couple of days? Go on rounds with me next Tuesday and see what you think after that. If everybody thinks this is all peachy keen, I'll get the paperwork in to make sure we can get you on board for some credit. An internship for the summer, sound good? She stared at her stunned.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. That'd be great. And I have my transcripts here.
She set her hat on the chair and took the sheets of paper she'd brought in with her out of the folder and handed them to Meg.
Excellent. You're prepared.
Meg flashed her a smile before she checked out Haley's grades,
which even from a cursory going over were great.
Well done, she said. Can I keep these?
Oh yes, I figured you'd need to start a file.
See? You're already on your way to becoming a vet. Files are the tools of the trade here.
See you tomorrow then at 1. That's my business card there.
She pointed at the small metal card holder on the far edge of her desk.
Take one, and if anything comes up between now and then, give us a call.
Haley set the folder on the chair and did as she was instructed. She slid the card into a back pocket and picked up the folder again.
Good to meet you, Meg said, as she motioned for Haley to precede her out of the office. She accompanied her to the front desk and into the lobby area.
Don't wear anything you don't want messed up.
Yes, ma'am. Dr. Talmadge.
Ginny looked up from where she was seated at her workstation.
Hi, Haley. Did the doctor scare you off yet?
Haley smiled, and the sadness that hovered just beneath her surface lightened.
No.
She's on her best behavior then.
Ginny, around you, I'm always on my best behavior.
Meg fluttered her eyelashes.
Haley's going to see if she can stand us, starting tomorrow.
I'm sure we'll find something to keep her busy for a while. Ginny looked from Haley to Meg, then back at Haley.
Well, that's some good news. What time?
1, Haley said.
Good. We need someone to keep us all in line. See you then.
Yep, thanks.
Haley raised her hat in a half wave before she put it on and left, holding the folder like it was something precious. Meg watched her through the glass doors as she climbed into a battered Ford Ranger. She turned to Ginny, who was suddenly very busy. Friend of yours? Meg asked, quirking an eyebrow in amusement.
Hard not to know folks doing this job.
Lazy R&T, Meg said, baiting her.
30 miles west.
Ginny stood and replaced a file in the large metal shelves against the wall.
Whose spread is that? Haley didn't talk about it.
Jack Roberts, she said as she returned to the computer. Wife, Laura. Jack died a while back and she remarried. Fellow named Bill Northrup, she said the name with a trace of disgust.
And Meg waited for her to continue, but she didn't offer anything more.
Huh.
She said she's taking a couple of classes this summer and she wants to get some hands-on experience. She seems pretty intent on vet school.
Sounds good,
Ginny said noncommittally. Meg watched her. Ginny wasn't saying something. I told her if she likes us, I'd hook her up with an internship this summer. She paused, remembering.
Damn, I need to make a couple of calls to the veterinary sciences folks.
I already did. The paperwork's right here.
She picked up a manila folder next to her monitor and reached over to set it on the counter.
So's the contact number. They need to start the process ASAP. So if you could look it over and sign it, I'll take it over.
Meg opened the folder, then closed it. Today? What if Haley hates us? She asked plaintively.
Not a chance. Tomorrow's okay, too.
Ginny looked up to her and smiled.
Or I'll just forge your signature.
Might as well. You seem to know more about what's going on with this than I ever will, she retorted with a grin. Ginny shrugged.
I think it'll be good for us to have some students around.
And some might be cute,
Sandra offered, grinning.
Far too young for an old hand like me, Meg shot back.
Well, Haley's a good prospect to help us out and get some experience. She's got good grades in all the right subjects. She's got another year here in pre-vet, and then she's going to try to get sponsored by the state like I did so she can go to CSU.
Hell, we can use more vets in this county, especially if they'll do rounds. She winked at Ginny.
Besides, I need some help sometimes in those rounds. Moonshine's good company, but he's worthless at diagnoses.
Ginny chuckled, and Meg returned to the back to supervise Kelly as she prepared the vaccinations for the next day's rounds.
Good work,
she said to Kelly as she inspected the syringes.
You know what to do now.
She let Kelly continue and got things ready for the next day, which meant she was able to get home before 6. She took Moonshine for a short walk and watched him move.
Looking good, buddy.
And being out of pain helped his spirits, too. He was downright frisky. She got him settled with his doggy dinner, then called Sean.
Dr. Horse Chick, I was just thinking about you. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
You sound better. Any deep and interesting thoughts?
She was smiling.
Meg could hear it in her voice.
Nothing since the last time I talked to you.
She propped the phone on her shoulder and got a pot ready for spaghetti. She had already decided not to mention that she'd been having dreams about Gina.
Then what's the point of calling? I want a damn Dear Abby moment, Meg. Ted's listening on the other phone so we can consult our Ouija board.
She smiled and she could hear Sean moving around the kitchen, probably making dinner as well.
I feel okay, I guess.
Sean didn't speak for a while, and Meg waited her out.
If your hunch is correct, she finally said, and Gina's interested in building a friendship with you and bouncing ideas off you, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I am. She watched bubbles forming on the bottom of the pot as the water heated.
What if she wants more?
She won't. Sean waited now, and Meg knew what her next question was, even though she didn't voice it, so she answered it. Gina's involved, and she doesn't fuck around.
Let me rephrase. What do you want?
Meg emptied a box of pasta into the pot and turned the heat on the stove down before responding.
I honestly don't know. At this point, I feel comfortable thinking that Gina just wants to be closer as friends. And I never thought I'd say this. I'm actually glad that she's involved because it keeps me from building fantasies and hoping for something I may never get.
You have been doing some thinking, she said quietly.
So how do you feel about her?
That was a tougher question. She stirred the pasta.
I think I'm attracted to her still. I've always been attracted to her, though.
Physically?
Sean asked as she did something that sounded like scraping a plate.
Definitely, but on other levels too. I'll probably always feel drawn to her in some respects. She's just one of those people whose connection I can't break. And I guess I'm tired of fighting it, so I'll just accept it and deal with it as it comes up.
Oh my God!
Sean said in a tone that sounded like she'd just uncovered the crown jewels in her pantry.
What?
Meg! This is huge for you. You just admitted you had a demon, and rather than hide it, which is what they want, by the way, you faced it. Holy shit. We need to celebrate.
She laughed. Dinner in Fort Collins next week?
Definitely. We'll toast your demon, find out what it drinks, and listen. I know you have a really fun-filled weekend involving several games of Dodge the Homophobic Mother and Horny Straight Guy, but check to see if Wednesday's okay.
Wait a minute. We don't know if Phil's horny or not. She chided.
Of course he is. All Irene had to do was show him a picture of you and he's flying his happy ass all the way to Cheyenne. With her. On a plane. A small enclosed space. With your mom.
Point taken, she said, grinning. Well, maybe he'll find solace in the arms of another. I'm sure there'll be at least one other single woman there who's straight.
For your sake, let us pray.
Oh, you dork,
Sean said.
Excuse me?
I got something in the mail today.
A bill? She said as she stirred the pasta. No, wait. One of those stupid coupon books. Hold on, I know. The latest issue of Veterinary Medicine.
Please. I already got that last week. Your Pony Express up there is slower. Now shut up so I can offer sincere thanks. Meg, that was so sweet of you. We love wine tastings. And this one includes chocolate. You know how I feel about chocolate.
She smiled. I figured you and Ted need a night out. Especially after dealing with my sorry ass through this whole fucking stupid situation. First Kate, then a Gina freakout. I mean, what the hell?
I love you guys, and I wanted to do something nice for you, so don't be telling me you can't accept it.
Who said anything about doing that? Damn, woman. Wine and chocolate?
Thank you, and we love you right back.
Sean made kissing noises over the phone.
Thanks.
For what? You're entirely lovable. And you bailed me out of crap so many times I've lost count. That's what you do for friends, hun. Just remember to tell them when you need something.
That's new. I'm working on it.
She put the spaghetti sauce in another pot and placed it on another burner.
I know. Okay. Try to have a great time this weekend and call if you need to. We'll be around.
All right. Have a good weekend your own selves.
Bye.
She hung up and watched the sauce for a bit to make sure she didn't have the burner on too high. Then she went back into the living room, where her gaze fell on the shoebox that held her past with Gina. She looked at it for a while, then sighed and picked it up and took it to her office. She hesitated before she replaced it on the shelf in the closet, and she took the lid off and stared at the folded piece of paper on top.
Stop it, she muttered.
She put the lid back on and returned the box to the shelf. She ate dinner, then worked a couple of hours on one of her papers, before she finally shut her computer down and stretched. Definitely time to get some sleep. Moonshine was dozing on the doggy bed against the wall, and Meg gave him a good night pat before she set the alarm on her bedside table and turned out the lamp. 5 minutes later, she swore softly to herself and went back into her office, turned on the light, and took the shoebox off the shelf in the closet. She opened it and removed the paper on top before she put the box back on the shelf and unfolded the paper so she could stare at Gina's image. It was no wonder she was having sex dreams about her. She returned to her bedroom and put the picture on her bedside table and ran her fingertips over it before she turned the light off.
"Skipper's on his way in," Ginny intoned in a fake horror voice.
"Can't wait," Meg said with a grimace. They were all standing in the reception area, where Meg had been showing Haley the filing system.
"Skipper?"
Haley looked from one to the other.
"Freak dog," Sandra replied. "He's not a very big guy. Some kind of mutt with maybe terrier in him, kind of cute, but he gets really nervous at the vet. Sometimes he manages to get away from Doc Meg's evil clutches, then he hides or runs all over the place, barking like a maniac. He's peed on the exam tables, too. And incited a doggy riot in the kennel area." Meg handed a folder back to Ginny.
"Don't forget the time he pooped right here in the lobby," Sandra said. The phone rang and she reached over to answer it.
"Yep, a nice addition to your second day here," Meg said. "Your first neurotic dog encounter. Ginny, do we have extra lab coats? I think Haley might need one for a skipper visit."
"Yes, we do. Be right back."
"Don't worry," Meg said at Haley's expression. "He's no worse than an ornery cow, and a lot smaller."
"How come he's like that?" she asked. "Was he abused?"
Meg wrote a reminder on Ginny's sticky notepad to check rabies vaccination supplies. "Nobody knows. His owner found him wandering around next to I-25 outside Cheyenne about 5 years ago. Skipper's fine with him, but not so great with anybody else, including other animals. I'm sure he went through a lot, though. Somebody might have dumped him out there because he's high-strung." She pulled the note off the pad and stuck it to the plastic edging of Ginny's monitor. "Or he got dumped and that's what made him that way. Here, Haley." Ginny reappeared and handed her a white lab coat. Haley slipped it on. It fell to mid-thigh, and the sleeves were a little long, but she rolled them up.
"Nice. Now you look like a mad scientist," Meg said, approving. "We already have Doc for that," Sandra said to Haley, who managed a smile.
Tough nut to crack, this Wyoming rancher kid, Meg thought. Brittle on the surface, but underneath something else. She glanced over at Ginny, who was watching her, but she quickly looked away, like Meg had busted her for something.
"Skipper's here," Sandra announced.
They all turned and looked at the front doors. An old green station wagon had pulled up in front.
"Battle stations," Meg said,
and Sandra giggled.
"Hi, Rex,"
Ginny said to the big man who entered, cradling a trembling ball of sandy brown fur in his massive arms. He looked like a lumberjack, Meg had decided when she first met him, but his real job, cable lineman, fit him too.
"Hi, all. We're here for Skipper's checkup and shots."
Kelly appeared from the back. "Hi, Mr. Gales. Room one this time. I sprayed some of that stuff in there that he likes."
"Thanks,"
he said as he followed her to room one, crooning softly to the dog in his arms.
"What stuff?" Haley asked Meg.
"Ginny thought we might try some lavender spray for animals who get particularly agitated."
"Does it work?"
She shrugged. "Maybe not on the animals, but it sure as hell helps me." Sandra laughed, and Ginny gave her a disapproving teacher glare. Haley cracked a full smile at that.
"All right. Let's see if Rex thinks it's a good idea to have you in there with his little wild animal."
Meg took Haley through the back and stopped at that entrance to the room where Rex and Skipper waited. She took the file from the plastic folder on the floor and opened it.
"Okay, I'm already familiar with a lot of Skipper's history, but I always check before I go in to see if anything happened between now and the last time I saw him. Nope, doesn't look like it. This is his standard yearly checkup."
The door opened and Kelly emerged.
"All set, Doc."
"Excellent," to Haley, she said. "And now for some bedside manner. It's just as important in veterinary medicine as in human medicine. Hold on a sec." Haley nodded and took a step to her right so Kelly could get past her.
"Hey, Rex and Skipper. Is it okay to have my intern in the room to watch Skipper's exam? Will he be okay with that, you think?"
"Can't be any worse than he already is,"
Rex replied.
"If it looks like Skipper can't deal, we'll change the game plan,"
She beckoned for Haley to precede her. This is Haley Roberts.
Hi, Mr. Gales. Thanks for letting me watch.
Meg smiled, approving of her approach. To Rex, she said, So how is Skipper? Anything new to report since last time?
Nope. Ride as rain.
Skipper had practically burrowed into Rex's left armpit, his small body trembling. Meg set the file on the small counter to her right and gently stroked the parts of Skipper's back that Rex's arms didn't block.
Hey, buddy. Don't worry. This is routine.
She carefully extricated Skipper, and he started wiggling and whining. It was like trying to hold on to a live sack of potatoes. She got him onto the exam table, and Rex got up to join her there, talking to him soothingly. Haley watched, and Rex flashed her a smile. He's way better now than he was even last year. Okay, so when you're doing an exam, Meg said to Haley, you're looking for lumps, bumps, anything that doesn't feel right. You'll get a sense of what a normal range is for different animals. It's a matter of handling lots of them to give yourself your own baseline for what to look for. She gently ran her fingers along Skipper's sides and then carefully manipulated his paws. Some animals have foot issues. Skipper, for all his other quirks, is not one of those. Haley leaned in as Meg lifted his right lip. We're also lucky because Skipper's not weird about his mouth. She checked both upper and lower teeth, looking for inflammation and signs of decay. I'm checking for signs of abnormalities on his teeth. And again, as you learn, you'll see what teeth should look like at certain ages. These look good for his age. Are you brushing them? She asked Rex.
Yes, ma'am, 3 times a week.
Good man. Rex, could you hold him while I check his ears?
Oh, you know he hates that,
Rex said with a soft laugh.
Yep, I do.
She pulled a scope out of her jacket pocket and turned it on. Skipper's wiggling increased tenfold, and Meg readjusted her position to give Rex room, but she lost her own hold, and Skipper skittered out of her grasp. Rex lunged for his collar, but Skipper launched himself off the exam table and beelined for the door to the lobby, where he stood on his hind legs and scratched at it, whining.
Come on, Skipper,
Rex coaxed as he slowly approached. Skipper ran under Rex's legs, lurched to avoid Meg, and practically threw himself at the door that would take him into the back area, and he scratched at that one, too.
Skipper, Rex crooned. Come on, sweetie. It's okay.
To no avail, because Skipper dashed to the other door, then to the back door, avoiding all of them with the finesse of a pro running back on his way downfield. After a few moments of controlled chaos, Meg started looking for the lavender spray in the cabinets. Maybe she could get Skipper stoned. Rex got down on his knees, still offering platitudes to the little furball, who had hunched himself into the corner next to the room's back door. And there you have it, Haley, Meg said. Skipper in action.
Sorry, Rex said. He has a hard time.
Meg found the spray and shook the bottle up.
Let me try, Haley said, her eyes on Skipper.
Sure,
Rex said and returned to the bench near the door that exited to the lobby. Meg stopped shaking the bottle and watched. Haley got down on one knee, giving Skipper plenty of room to bolt if he felt the need.
Hey, Skipper, she said in a low voice. Don't worry. It's okay. Good boy.
She held her hand out and Skipper stopped cowering, and much to Meg's surprise, he tentatively leaned toward her and sniffed her fingertips.
See? It's okay, Haley coaxed.
Skipper took a step toward her, still sniffing her hand, and then he licked her fingers and wagged his little stub of a tail.
Well, I'll be damned,
Rex said softly as Skipper let Haley pick him up and set him gently on the exam table.
My friends, I do believe we have just witnessed a miracle.
Meg returned the spray to the cabinet, pleased. Haley stroked Skipper's head, and when Meg examined his ears, the only thing he did was press the side of his head she wasn't looking at harder against Haley's hands.
I don't know where you found your intern, but I reckon you'd better keep her on board,
Rex said as Meg finished. I'll hire her just to deal with Skipper, Meg agreed.
Well done, Ms. Roberts.
She studied Haley as the latter handled Skipper, and by the time his shots were done, he had calmed down considerably. Rex practically beamed.
Thanks, Doc. And thanks, Ms. Roberts. Hope you stick around.
Same here, Meg said. Take care, Rex. And you too, Skipper. She gave him a final pat before Rex exited the room. When he'd left, she turned to Haley.
Excellent work. You've definitely attained dog whisperer status.
What's your secret?
Haley shrugged. I know how he feels, and he could tell.
Before Meg could respond, Haley opened the door to the back.
I'm going to wash my hands. What's next?
Nicole's got to get some vaccinations ready. You feel like watching?
Definitely. Thanks, Doc.
And she left, ensuring that Meg couldn't ask any follow-up questions about her strange rapport with Skipper. What happened to you? Meg wondered. But she didn't have time to dwell on it, as Sandra appeared in the doorway to the lobby.
Doc, we've got a cat with a busted leg coming in. Doc Roy asked if you could take his 3 o'clock while he deals with the cat.
On my way. She went to get the file on the incoming patient, then checked in again with Haley. How long do you want to stick around today?
I can be here till closing.
Sounds good. Check in with me before you go. And if you've decided we don't suck, you can start working on a schedule. She gave her a smile.
Thanks, Doc.
Are you as good with cats as you are with dogs?
I'm okay with them. We had cats on the ranch and they seemed to like me all right.
Good. I've got a cat case right now. Come on.
Yes, ma'am.
Haley followed her, and by the time the appointment ended, Meg was convinced that Haley was a vet in the making. She put her to work with Gary walking some of the dogs and checked in with Ginny. Anything else come up? Meg asked.
Nuh-uh,
Sandra answered since Ginny was on the phone. What do you think of Haley?
I like her, and anybody who can do that with Skipper has magic powers.
Meg grinned. Well, let's hope we didn't scare her off. Sandra smiled back.
I don't think she scares easily.
Oh?
She's a Wyoming ranch kid. We don't get scared. We just get dirty, and sometimes even.
Meg laughed. Remind me not to piss you off.
Takes a lot to do that. And I knew when I met you that you weren't that type.
What type?
The type that goes around randomly pissing people off.
Some people would definitely disagree, Meg said wryly. She glanced at the clock above the front door. Nearly 5. She had to drive to the ranch tonight, and she'd be using that ride to steal herself, because Irene flew in tonight, and she was definitely someone Meg randomly pissed off.
Doc?
Meg looked up as Haley came in from the back. What's up?
We got the dogs taken care of.
Excellent. You ready to go?
Yes, ma'am, if it's okay.
Sure. So you've had 2 days here now. Want to stick around?
Absolutely.
Okay, how about this? Skip Monday, but come in on Tuesday. I'm doing rounds. Can you be here at 7?
Definitely.
Great. Bring a schedule you'd like to work. Shoot for 20 hours. Try to get a weekend or two in, because that's when Brady Stillwell comes in. He's mostly retired, but he likes to help out. It'd be good for you to get some time in with him too, as well as the other vets around here.
I will.
She shrugged out of her lab coat and held it out. Pick a hook by my office and hang it there. Welcome aboard, Ms. Roberts.
Thanks, Doc. Thank you so much.
She said it almost reverently. Thank Ginny. She's been pushing to get an intern here. Glad you came in. Haley glanced at Ginny, who was on the phone, then back at Meg.
Tuesday, 7.
Yep. Have a good weekend. Call if you need to. I'll be in Saratoga this weekend, so I can't save you from a burning building or anything, but I can answer vet-related questions, or at least pretend to. Sandra laughed, but Haley just nodded.
Yes, ma'am.
She ducked into the back, but reappeared soon after without the lab coat, but with her backpack.
Thanks again. Bye, everybody.
Ginny was still on the phone, but she waved along with Sandra. Meg watched her leave, wondering what kept parts of her so tightly sealed.
What do you think?
Ginny asked. Meg turned.
She's got animal magic, as Sandra put it. Vet in the making there. And she wants to stick around. So let's get that paperwork in. Can you fax it over now?
Ginny smiled.
Already did. Everything's set. Once I have her schedule, I can file it with the university.
I see that my work here is done then.
It is. I know you have to get on the road. Have a good weekend.
I'll try. In spite of Irene and Phil, she planned to do just that. Chapter 9.
So Meg takes a hold of this calf's tail, see? And she digs her heels in like this,
Jackson demonstrated.
And darn if she didn't haul that booger out of that ditch. She flipped it over on its side and tied its legs quicker than a rookie bull rider loses his seat.
A ripple of laughter accompanied Jackson's story, and Meg grinned as she stared into the bonfire's flames. Alice bumped against her and caught her eye. She smiled at her, and Meg shrugged sheepishly. I had to get it out of the ditch, she said, bringing another round of laughter from the gathered guests. The nightly fireside gatherings were a tradition at the DR during summers as long as Meg could remember. She recognized a few of the guests as repeat visitors, including an artist from St. Paul named Marjorie, who had been coming to the ranch like clockwork this time every year for 10 years. Bruce launched into a rollicking cowboy song, and Meg leaned back, lifting her face to the sky and the millions of stars that gleamed like light through pinholes. She inhaled deeply, smelling the rich, warm scent of burning pine from the fire and the distinctive odor of the national forest lands that bordered the ranch. Crisp and cool, like early summer nights here. Moonshine was curled up behind the bench next to Nutter and Hellfire. The comforting, solid sound of Stan's voice rose and fell in his storytelling cadence, and Meg felt at home in the world, felt a sense of belonging. Tomorrow, she and Stan would scout locations for a clinic, and she looked forward to it. "Showtime," Alice said quietly at her shoulder, breaking Meg's reverie. Meg followed Alice's gaze to the crest of the rise above the ranch. A pair of headlights appeared as a car began the slight descent toward the buildings. She groaned softly. Irene and Phil. She had been hoping that maybe, just maybe, their flight would be canceled. Or Irene would wake up in the throes of reality and call the whole thing off. About as likely, she saw, as it would be for her to wake up straight the next morning. Stan finished his story just as the car pulled up in front of the motel. Jim and Bastard were already sniffing around its tires. When was the last time Irene had been here? Meg's brow creased as she thought about it. 6 years ago, July. Meg had visited her in Lexington 3 years later and left 2 days early because she couldn't take the constant proselytizing. Irene had been born again as an evangelical Christian, and unlike many Christians Meg had met over the years, Irene was constantly in her face with it, telling her how she needed to find Jesus or she'd burn in hell, how she could stop being gay, how all she needed to do was find the right man. During her last visit to Kentucky, Meg told Irene that all she needed to do was find the right woman, and that was the point at which the visit disintegrated. Meg caught Stan's eye. He shrugged, and she got up to follow him across the parking area to the vehicle, a Lincoln Town car. Typical. Irene never lost her Southern lady edge, even when she had tried life at the DR with Stan. She liked a big, comfortable lifestyle. It was hard for Meg to reconcile the powder blue-suited woman who got out of the passenger side with the jeans and boots woman she'd known until she was 16. Meg braced herself for the tornado of cologne and niceties as she approached.
"Oh, my," Irene gushed. "There's my Meg."
She practically threw herself into Meg's arms. She was wearing a different cologne these days. It smelled like roses. "Hi, Mom. How was the drive?" Irene stepped back to appraise her in the light from the motel verandas. Meg had inherited her height from her father's side of the family. She stood about 5'6", whereas Irene topped off at 5 feet even. But she always seemed larger than life, through the sheer force of her personality. Too bad she uses it for evil, Meg thought. Irene tisked,
"Honey, must you wear those boots? Can't you at least find a nicer color than black?"
Meg smiled to soften the blow of her retort. "Pink doesn't look good with cow shit, Mom." Irene's eyes glazed slightly and her jaw muscles clenched. She patted her hair, dyed platinum blonde these days. She had it pulled back from her face into a ponytail that seemed a little casual for her. "So, how was the drive?" Meg asked, trying to make nice.
"Oh, just fine," she brightened. "Phil thinks it's beautiful out here. Phil, this is my daughter Meg."
"Hi. Phil Jeffries, good to meet you,"
said the big man who had come around the front of the town car to tower behind Irene. He stood as tall as Jackson, and he was broad across the shoulders, though a little thick through the middle. He had probably played some kind of contact sport in college. His voice carried a Kentucky drawl, but not as thick as Irene's. She took his proffered hand, which seemed the size of a football. He had a nice warm grip. "Hi. Welcome to the Diamond Rock Ranch," she said politely. He wasn't bad looking. Wide, pleasant features and an aw-shucks smile. Typical Southern white guy.
"You look good, Irene," Stan said from behind Meg. "We've got you set up in the motel in the new section."
We're a little pressed for space, but I had to reschedule, and you and Phil each get your own rooms.
Stan hugged Irene briefly with one arm around her shoulders, then turned to Phil and shook his hand.
Welcome aboard. I'm Stan Talmadge. Let us know if you need anything. Breakfast starts at 7 over in the lodge.
He pointed toward the dining room.
Lunch at noon, dinner at 6. We're a pretty informal bunch. You can schedule your activities in the mornings with Bruce. Sounds great. Thank you, sir.
Definitely Southern. Meg smiled. Sean had grown up in South Carolina and still used Southern expressions now and again, though she had lost most of her accent. She had stopped using sir and ma'am with her elders, and they were halfway through vet school after Meg teased her about it.
Well, let's get you settled, Stan said. Phil, how about you pop the trunk?
He complied and pulled Irene's massive rollaway suitcase out of the car and set it on the wooden floor of the veranda. He wheeled it over to her room on the first floor of the new section of the motel, Stan directing. Phil's room was right next door. He traveled with one small duffel bag, which Meg appreciated.
Are you hungry? Come on over to the dining room and Alice will fix you up with something,
Stan said amiably, following along. Meg was extremely glad her father was mediating the conversation for her.
I'm good, Phil said. We stopped in Laramie. If you don't mind, I think I'll just turn in. No problem. There's bottled water in your room. Make sure you drink a lot of water while you're here. Easy to get dehydrated in the dry air. Take it easy for the first day, since you're at altitude. Good advice. Thanks.
He turned to Irene.
Mrs. Bard, I'll see you tomorrow. Good night.
Phil offered a little wave and entered his room. None of the rooms were locked at the DR, though they did offer keys to guests if they felt the need to lock up.
See? That wasn't so bad now, was it?
Irene said in an I-told-you-so tone to Meg. Stan cleared his throat and glanced at the wooden floor of the veranda. Meg knew he was struggling not to laugh, and that made her feel much better. She relaxed and smiled.
It's good to see you, Mom. You do look good. How's Ed?
She beamed.
Oh, he's fine. Playing a lot of golf these days before it gets too hot.
She fiddled with one of her tennis bracelets.
Well, you must be tired after the trip, Stan interjected. Do you need anything?
Oh, no. Just some sleep.
If you need anything else, just let me or Meg know. Here, I'll put your suitcase in.
He lifted it easily and opened the door to Irene's room. He had purposely ensured that she got a bigger room than Phil. It included a queen-size bed, a closet, and a dresser. Meg had no doubt that Irene would put all of that to work. She followed him in. Then he returned to the veranda and shut the door behind him.
Hell, honey, he said to Meg. After breakfast, let's go scout locations.
Can we take all day? She asked plaintively as she followed him back to the bonfire. All weekend? He laughed. Irene swept into the dining room the next morning like Scarlett O'Hara. If she had a hoop skirt on, it would have swirled. The thing was, Meg thought as she watched her mom work the room, she was actually a vivacious, attractive, interesting woman. Meg remembered liking her up until her early 20s. That was about the time Irene got caught up in the whole religion thing. And after Meg came out to her father, she came out to Irene too, who didn't take it very well. Still hadn't. And their relationship, which had been reasonably cordial until then, decidedly cooled. Meg took a sip of her coffee before she stood as Irene approached. She was wearing tight new jeans that wouldn't withstand a day's worth of ranch work, a blue shirt that matched the piercing blue of her eyes, and a red bandana around her neck. And she actually had a pair of pink ropers on. Meg bit her lip and gave her a quick hug. Did you sleep okay?
Like the dead. I forgot how peaceful it is here.
Irene picked the clean cup up from the table and crossed the room to the buffet table where a do-it-yourself coffee urn stood. Morning, Phil. How'd you sleep? Meg said as he approached the table. He yawned and grinned.
Great. Y'all have iced tea? Or something like that? I'm not really a coffee man.
Sure, I'll get you some. Meg retreated into the kitchen and poured Phil a tall glass of tea. She put a long-handled spoon in it. Alice emerged from the walk-in.
Morning, sweetie.
Go on out there and introduce yourself to Phil, so he crushes out on you and leaves me alone. Alice laughed and wiped her hands on a dish towel. Meg pursed her lips, thinking, you might wear him out, though, since we're at altitude, she teased, as Alice started organizing some things for lunch. Tammy was busy at one of the counters.
I like my men with a few years on 'em, she shot back with a wicked little smile. But there's nothing wrong with trying the newer models out, Tammy laughed. They're usually all flash and no mileage, though. Alice went back into the walk-in before Meg could respond, and not for the first time. She thought Alice would make a good match for her dad. Alice reappeared. Oh, I packed you and your dad some sandwiches. They're in the fridge. Now take that poor boy his beverage, she said, gesturing at the glass of tea Meg held. He's probably parched, she winked. Thanks, Alice. You're the best. Meg leaned down and planted a kiss on her cheek before she went back into the dining room where she set the glass down in front of Phil. He had already loaded his plate with eggs, sausage, bacon, toast, and fruit. Sugar's right there. It's not sweet tea, she told him. He glanced up at her appreciatively. Thanks. Irene's plate was arranged in neat categories. One egg, a small serving of fruit, one slice of bacon, and one sausage. She sat across from Meg, sipping her coffee. Meg had already eaten, and she sat listening to the morning conversations and watching Irene pick at her food. Bruce was chatting with a small group that probably wanted to go horseback riding, and Jackson was checking something with Jake, one of the other hands. Marjorie caught Meg's eye and she waved, mouthing, "Talk to you later." Meg nodded.
"Your mom tells me you're a vet," Phil said between bites.
"She is indeed," Irene responded. "She's always been good with animals."
Meg nodded. "I am. I work in a clinic in Laramie." He took another bite, chewed, and swallowed. He had a pleasant way about him, didn't seem intrusive, just nice.
"I had my dad run a business with Ed."
"Something to do with horse breeding, then?" He glanced at her and smiled.
"Yep, I love horses."
Meg looked over at Irene, who was smiling smugly. Only Irene would read a grand romance into chit-chat like that. "So do you do the actual breeding programs?" she asked him.
"Not really. I'm more the accounting side of things. I'm good with finances and management. I like riding, but I'm not much for all the work that goes into the training and prep."
He cut a piece of sausage. A weekend cowboy. "Well, let Bruce know if you'd like to do a little riding this weekend. Different terrain here. Differently trained horses. Might give you some ideas."
"Matt, think I'll take it easy today, though. I'm sort of on a bit of a vacation."
Meg stood. "Sounds good. Mom, Dad, and I have to check a few things this morning. We'll be back after lunch." Irene looked at her, surprised. She turned her attention to Phil, then back to her.
"Why don't you take Phil?"
Meg looked down at Phil. He continued eating. "I don't think that's on Phil's agenda today. Maybe tomorrow."
"Now, honey, I'm sure Phil would love to go with you."
"It's okay, Mrs. Bard,"
he interrupted, not unkindly.
"I'll just hang around today, chat up some of the hands. I'm interested to see how things run."
He smiled broadly, and Meg almost choked on her coffee because Irene practically fluttered her eyelashes at him. She'd for sure have to have a talk with him before he got his hopes up.
"All right," Meg announced. "Mom, you set for today?"
Irene waved dismissively and smiled.
"Well, since it's been a while since I've been here, I'll tag along with Phil."
"I'm sure he'll love that," Meg thought, leaving it unvoiced. "Okay, catch up with you later." She waved and picked her hat up off the adjoining chair and put it on before she went through the kitchen to drop her coffee cup off. "How's the matchmaking going?" Alice asked innocently.
"A bust so far, but I think Phil's on to Irene anyway."
"He seems okay." "Here's your chance," Meg said, leering. Alice laughed, and Meg opened the fridge and took the bag of sandwiches out.
"Thanks again. We'll be back after lunch sometime. I'll make sure Irene's not bored," she grinned.
"Don't wear yourself out." She left through the back door and went around front. Moonshine limped up to her and she bent down to scratch him.
"You can't come, buddy. It'd tire you out and mess up your leg."
She had given him his pain medicine already. She checked Booger, too, when she got back, see how she was doing. Nutter and Hellfire liked to explore, so Meg expected they'd come along. She straightened just as Phil emerged from the dining room. He saw her and started toward her.
"I was wondering,"
he began. "Look, Phil," she said, deciding to just get it over with.
"I don't know what Irene told you, and I'm sorry she dragged you halfway across the country. But you seem like a smart guy, so I'm sure you've already figured out that she's playing matchmaker."
He drew back, surprised at first. Then a slow grin tugged at his mouth.
Well, yeah, she told me a bit about you. Plus, she has a rep for trying to set you up with every man she meets.
Meg sighed. She pushed the brim of her hat back a bit so she could look him in the eye. I'm just gonna put this out there for you, okay? You and me, no chance. And it's not because I think you're a bad guy. You're not my type. I don't go for guys. Her tone stayed neutral, but she watched him for his reaction. He chuckled.
I kinda figured.
She stared at him, momentarily surprised.
Your mom showed me pictures and said this was your 35th birthday, and she said you'd never been married and hadn't had much time for a boyfriend. As good as you look, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to put two and two together. No boyfriend, mature, good-looking, probably not into guys.
She frowned, a little embarrassed at the frank assessment of her life. So what are you doing here, then? He glanced over his shoulder toward the dining room, then back at Meg. She took that as a cue for a little more privacy, and she motioned for him to walk with her toward the horse paddock.
I'm engaged,
he said quietly as he crossed the parking area. That took her aback.
But nobody really knows except her family and a few of my friends.
Okay, she said hesitatingly. Congratulations, I guess. When's the day? They stopped just outside the horse barn. A few of the guests were standing outside, while Bruce and Jake explained some fundamentals of riding to them. Meg motioned Phil over to the fence that overlooked the paddock.
Not for a while, he said.
He pulled his wallet out of the back pocket of his jeans and flipped through it. He withdrew a picture and handed it to Meg. She took it and suddenly understood what the issue might be. A pretty African-American woman sat on what looked like a park bench underneath a big tree. Meg gauged her age in her mid to late 20s. She's pretty, Meg said as she handed it back. He smiled and looked at the photo for a bit. He was clearly smitten. He put it carefully back into his wallet and slid his wallet into his pocket.
My daddy's old school Alabama, he said, gazing at the horses in the paddock. He comes from old money and old ways.
He glanced at her, perhaps checking to see if she saw where he was going with this.
And my mama's old school Southern. She's a Kentucky side of the family. My daddy knew some stuff about horses, but not as much as mama. So he married her and learned the business. He runs in old school circles, with old school friends, and the only place black people have in his life is as stable hands and servants.
He stopped and cleared his throat. What about your mom? He let his breath out between his teeth.
Not much better. She's from old money, too. Old white money, built on the backs of slaves, before the war.
She knew he was talking about the Civil War.
Some of her family owned slaves. It's not part of our history I'm proud of.
She waited for him to continue, feeling an odd kinship with him. Neither of them, in their respective contexts, was really free to love who they wanted.
I met Alicia our senior year at Duke. She's from Boston.
A wistful, goofy look crossed his face. You fell for her hard, huh? She asked with a smile, knowing what the answer would be.
Very. That was 2 years ago. I met her family right off. They were standoffish at first. I can't blame them. Southern white boy, after all. A lot of baggage there. But after a bit, it went smoother. Now her mama calls me to see how I'm doing.
But your family doesn't know. He shook his head, a grim expression in his eyes.
My daddy disowned me. He said so. When he found out I had black friends at college, he told me that was fine as long as I didn't bring them around. I've told her family about my family. I was upfront about it from the get-go. And I know it gives them pause about me and Alicia. I can't blame them. Life would be a hell of a lot easier in some respects if I didn't love her.
Amen to that, Meg thought. That's rough. I'm sorry to hear that. So why'd you let Irene talk you into coming out here? The look in his eyes softened.
Alicia and I are moving west. She's going to start law school at the University of Denver this fall. I have a couple of contacts in Denver that I'm going to go see on Monday. Irene's flying back to Lexington without me. I'll fly back the middle of the week from Denver.
He turned to face her.
And as soon as my daddy finds out, that's it for me and him. But I've already got a venture up and running with some partners out here. Can't talk too much about it, but it's a go. I'm pretty good with business.
She looked at him with a new interest. Good with business. Something to keep in mind.
And I figured I might be able to chat up the hands and your dad about how things work out west. Every bit of information helps. You never know who you might meet after all.
He smiled at her.
Maybe get some info from you, too.
She nodded in agreement. I appreciate you telling me your story.
and I'm glad I didn't scare you. He laughed. I kind of know what it's like to have family members who aren't into what you do with your life. Thanks for being upfront with me.
Sure thing. Dad'll be back later this afternoon. I'll tell him you're interested in the business end of things. He loved to talk about that.
All right,
he said, slapping the wood of the fence lightly.
I'll see you around.
I reckon, she responded, smiling. She watched him head back to the lodge, just as Irene burst through the door talking to an older male guest. She ducked into the horse barn past Bruce and went to find Destry in calico, her father's favorite paint. As she saddled Destry, she thought about Phil's story. At least she knew her father would never disown her for loving who she loved. Her mother, maybe. But she didn't expect anything from Irene. Had stopped expecting anything when Irene moved back to Kentucky. Meg adjusted Destry's bridle and looped the reins loosely over the fence, just as Stan emerged from the barn with his saddle.
Let's blow this pop stand,
he said, grinning. Chapter 10 Meg urged Destry into a full gallop, and she grinned into the wind as the horse plunged forward, flanks heaving, bit clicking in her teeth. Meg's hat threatened to blow off her head, but the string at her chin kept it in place. She whooped and leaned into Destry's speed, watching her father to the left and the smooth motion of Calico's legs. Meg's breathing echoed Destry's, and she felt a part of the horse, echoing her motions, standing in the stirrups and hunched into the wind. Destry's hooves pounded the earth, sure over the meadow as the ranch loomed closer. Meg guided her closer to Calico, and Stan shifted his weight, allowing Calico another burst of speed. She closed the distance and drew abreast of Calico's left side. She let Destry have her head as she leaned over, and in one smooth motion pulled Stan's hat off his head frontwise, so that the string around his chin wouldn't choke him. At almost the same time, she tapped her heels lightly against Destry's sides, and the horse lunged into a burst of speed.
God damn it!
Stan shouted after her, laughing and whooping. She didn't look back, and didn't slow Destry, till a quarter mile from the lodge, where she waited for Stan and Calico to catch up.
Damn, Stan said as Calico trotted over. Where'd you get them skills?
He laughed. You? She shot back. She handed him his hat.
Wouldn't want the guest to think you lost it, she said.
He leaned over and punched her lightly on the arm.
It's a good thing I love you, he said. Otherwise, I'd run you right off of this spread.
He put his hat on.
That'd leave you dealing with Mom the whole time, she shot back.
He was quiet before sighing heavily.
I feel bad for you, hon. I wish there was something I could do about it. She doesn't take kindly to me trying to talk to her about it, unfortunately.
She didn't answer right away. They slowed their horses to a walk. It's not your fault. She is what she is. She glanced over at him. Why'd you marry her?
You know, I wish you'd just get to the point, he teased, and tell me what's on your mind.
Yeah. It's just that she seems so different than she was before she left. I just sometimes wonder. He shrugged.
Your mom's a looker. I wish I'd been a stronger man then, but I was really young and she was very persuasive. You know how she is. That's actually one of the things I liked about her. She wouldn't take no for an answer.
He paused.
It's hard for women sometimes, and I liked that she stood up for herself. Besides, if I hadn't, I wouldn't have you.
He smiled at Meg.
She's a hell of a horsewoman, too. Better than I was at the time. I don't know if she does much riding anymore, but damn, she could then. You must have gotten some of your skills from her as well.
It seems all I did was piss her off when I was growing up, she said quietly. It seems that's all I do now. Funny. She didn't remember her mom ever riding horses or enjoying herself.
I know. You have to understand that when you were younger, it was hard on your mom living out here isolated. She wasn't used to that. And you know she had problems getting and staying pregnant.
He cleared his throat.
When Thomas was born, it was a miracle. We'd lost one before him.
She stared at him. She hadn't known that. Did she carry it to term?
No.
Stan shifted in his saddle.
And when Thomas only lived 3 months, she almost lost her mind. She went back to Kentucky for a few months. And when she came back, she was different. Harder, maybe.
She hid things with superficial bullshit. We were all right for a while, but soon it was obvious she wasn't happy. So she went back to Kentucky again, for a year. Then she came back, and during that year she came back was when she got pregnant with you.
He flashed her a smile.
She was happy, but scared. She couldn't go through losing another one. And we did talk about terminating the pregnancy so he wouldn't have to deal with that.
Meg stayed silent.
But the doctor said this one was healthy.
He glanced over at her.
They convinced us. The pregnancy was hard on her, too. I know she worried that the doctors were wrong and that she'd lose you, but she didn't. And then the labor was hard.
He smiled at Meg.
But you were ready. I will never forget seeing you come into this world. Your eyes were already open, and you had this look on your face, kind of a let-her-rip expression. I know newborns don't really look like much of anything, but you were different. I could tell. And I cried like a baby. I was crying before you were.
She swallowed around the lump in her throat, surprised and touched.
Your mom held you and kind of studied you, and she said, she's her father's daughter, just like that. And as you grew, I guess she was right.
So why do I drive her crazy?
Hell, I don't know. Why do I drive her crazy? Your mom has certain ideas about what a daughter should be like and what a girl's supposed to do, I guess. And you defied those. Ever since you joined us, you've been your own person, carving your own path, and your mom had no idea how to deal with that. Still doesn't. I know she makes you nuts. But she hasn't had an easy time of it either.
He shrugged. Does it bother you that you probably won't get grandchildren out of me? Meg kept her eyes on Destry's ears, thinking that maybe that was part of Irene's issue with her. Though even if she were straight, she doubted she'd want kids.
Nope, don't need them.
But when I'm gone, the ranch might not stay in the family.
Well, you've got cousins, my brother's kids. They're all right. We'll find a way to keep it in the family. But when you get right down to it, I won't give a rat's ass who gets this place after I'm dead. And you won't either. After you're gone, it's for the living. And the person who gets it will be the one who's supposed to get it.
He reached down and slapped Calico gently on the neck. Her chest tightened.
Dad, he looked over at her. Does it bother you that I won't end up with a man?
He was quiet for a long time, and then he reined Calico to a stop. She halted Destry as well. He looked at her.
At first, yeah, it did. Not because I thought you were bad or messed up or anything like that, but because I just didn't understand where you got that. I had some...
He stopped, searching for the right words.
Some not very informed ideas, and I worried about you. There are some people in this world who want to make things hard for people like you.
He shifted his weight in the saddle and regarded her.
But damn it, it's part of you. And looking back on it, I should have seen it coming.
He chuckled wryly.
I just want you to be happy. I want you to find someone who's going to love you for who you are, who'll have your back and will take care of you, and who won't mind if you take care of her when she needs it.
She felt like she might cry again.
You're the best damn daughter any man could ask for, and no matter what, I will always be here for you. As long as I have breath in my body, I'm so damn proud of you, Meg. Everything you've accomplished.
He stopped talking and urged Calico forward.
I hope the woman of your dreams is out there. You deserve it.
He looked back over his shoulder.
Let's go see what your mom and Phil are up to.
She rolled her eyes and smiled, glad he didn't continue in that vein, because she'd be blubbering soon.
Hey,
she called after him. He wheeled Calico around and waited.
I'm really glad you're my dad.
Well, shit. Me too.
And he suddenly kicked Calico into a gallop.
Winner take all,
he shouted.
Cheater!
She shouted back as Destry lurched after them at her urging. Destry was fast, and even with Calico's head start, they overtook Stan and Calico and passed them, Meg whooping and Stan yelling and laughing as she raced past. She reined in behind the lodge and dismounted so Destry could walk some of her exertions off. Stan did the same with Calico.
So what about that spot just off the county road?
He asked as he wiped tack down.
Seemed the best possibility. There's the water issue and trash and biohazard issues.
He shrugged.
I'll make some calls. See what I can find out.
I will too.
She led Destry to the paddock, Stan and Calico right behind.
productive day, he said as he watched the horses for a moment.
Yeah.
Guess we better quit playing hooky.
He gave her a look. She sighed.
Guess so.
She followed him to the dining room. Irene was leaving tomorrow afternoon. Might as well try to make nice. Meg sat outside next to Marjorie, eating birthday cake after a birthday hamburger. Stan had, of course, gotten the guests to sing happy birthday and then toast her. And then he teased her mercilessly about the number of candles on the sheet cake Bruce and Bud had carried out of the kitchen. She didn't mind, though, because it was so good.
So how's the art going? Meg asked. Did you sell those paintings you were talking about last year?
Marjorie smiled smug.
I did, and for more than I originally asked.
She took a drink from her plastic cup.
Congratulations. You're getting a following.
And today she certainly did look like an artist. Marjorie's first visit to the ranch had been 10 years ago, the same week Meg had met Gina, and Meg had immediately liked her and her eccentric fashion quirks. Today's ensemble involved a loose linen purple blouse and lightweight turquoise trousers, though Marjorie's hikers were simple tan and black.
I guess you could call it that. I just love doing it.
Meg balanced her paper plate on her thigh and took a bite of cake, savoring.
Are you still with Kate?
Marjorie asked. Meg looked at her, surprised that she'd remember.
No, actually. I'm sorry. Was it recent?
November.
How are you doing with it?
Meg shrugged. As well as can be expected, I guess.
Not that it's my business, but she wasn't right for you.
She set her glass on the ground next to her feet. When? Oh, that's right. You met her last summer.
Nice girl. Not for you.
Marjorie took another bite of cake and chewed slowly, a thoughtful expression on her face. Why not?
She didn't understand you. You need someone who appreciates your cowgirl essence and encourages it.
Meg sat back, feeling put on the spot.
Oh, really? And Kate wasn't that woman?
Marjorie took a bite and looked at her innocently.
No.
Geez, Margie, just tell me what's on your mind.
She giggled and shrugged. Gina, she said. Now she understood you. I could see it.
Meg didn't answer and instead took a bite of cake.
You met her 10 years ago this week, didn't you? That was my first time to the DR.
Marjorie smiled.
It was your birthday then, too.
Guess you just like to come out to Wyoming and celebrate with me. Meg smiled back.
I love coming here. It's a highlight of my year.
She finished her cake.
I was sad to hear it didn't work between you and Gina. I really liked her.
The cake she was trying to swallow barely made it down her throat.
Do you ever hear from her?
Meg nodded. I do, actually. She sends me a birthday card every year, and we email now and again.
That's nice. Do you ever see her?
Not for a few years, but she's supposed to be in the States in August. We're going to try to get a visit in then.
Well, I hope you do.
We'll see. So, Michael? Marjorie smiled.
He couldn't come this year. He had to go to a wedding. He wasn't thrilled about it.
Glad to hear he's still hanging around. Bring him next time. Meg winked and picked up her plate and Marjorie's. See you at the bonfire. Marjorie waved, and Meg took the plates to the trash cans that Jackson and Bud had set up outside near the grills. Irene stood near one of the grills, chatting with Phil and a couple of the guests. A mid-40s guy that Meg remembered was either a lawyer or a marketing executive and his wife.
Excuse me, she said to the man and his wife. Just a quick interruption. Thanks, Mom.
She held up the gift card for Body Works and gave Irene a quick hug.
I really like their vanilla hand lotion. It smells pretty.
Irene looked pointedly at her.
I'll go in and check it out.
Meg slid the card into her back pocket.
You coming to the bonfire?
Of course. Your dad does tell a good story. And I'm sure he'll have a few about your past birthdays.
Meg smiled. Yeah, I'm sure he'll tell him, too. Okay, see you in a few, then. Phil glanced at her, and he surreptitiously rolled his eyes at her with a little smile on his face.
Happy birthday again, he said.
Thanks. See you at the bonfire.
Yep.
She smiled back at him and headed toward the office. Stan would be busy with bonfire preparations, so she'd have some time to herself. She settled in at the computer and logged into her account. An email from Gina's sister Mary was waiting for her. The subject line said, Hi Meg, this is from Gina. She smiled and clicked on it.
Hi Meg, Mary here, in case you didn't figure that out yet, LOL. Gina sent this to me actually 2 weeks ago,
and then she emailed me a different file a few days ago and wanted me to send that one instead. So, here it is. I scanned it for viruses. Grin. You know how she is about timing and stuff. She only has access to the internet at certain times of the day. And she didn't want you to have to keep checking your email all day wondering when whatever it was would show up. That's why she included a time. Gotta love that little anal retentive tendency. Anyway, hope you're all right. Gina makes it back to the States in August. Come and see us. Ciao, Mary.
Meg looked at the attached file, a video. So she right-clicked to download it and waited, impatient while it did. Finally, an image appeared on the screen. Gina. She stared.
Hiya, cowgirl.
Meg's heart rammed her lungs. It was the first time she'd heard Gina's voice in 5 years, and it was like the first time she'd ever heard it. Low, warm, and inviting.
I had this all ready to go about 2 weeks ago, but after I got your email with your updates, I redid it so it wouldn't sound dated.
Gina was sitting on a low gray couch. From the appearance of the room, Meg guessed it was her hotel room in Istanbul. It seemed bland and sort of Western looking. Gina wore a black shirt, which brought out her hair and eyes. Her voice, at once familiar but new, made Meg's breathing speed up.
I'm doing this, Gina said, because I think a lot of emotional weight can get lost in email. I'm hoping that seeing me talking to you might make a difference, she grinned. By now, you're probably hiding out in your dad's office to avoid Irene. I know she's your mom, but I can't say that I blame you for that.
She smiled and shook her head in sympathy.
At any rate, she leaned forward. It's hard looking at a camera and pretending it's you, but it's the best I've got, so I hope you can bear with me. Knowing you, I have a feeling you're probably wondering what's up with me, since I have been spilling a lot in the past week or so. I don't know yet myself. I do know that I need a break from this life, and I will be applying for a stateside position. Hopefully it'll be the one I mentioned in your birthday card. She paused. Here's the thing, Meg. She looked directly into the camera. I've been thinking about you. A lot.
She looked away, and Meg's chest constricted. Gina returned her gaze to the camera.
I meant what I said in my letter. Whenever I'm feeling unrooted and unraveled, I think of you, and then I know I'm okay.
She smiled, albeit sadly.
So what I'm hoping is that you'll want to reconnect on some level. Before you freak out, I'm not asking for the past. I'm asking for a friendship that's more than an email here, an email there, a card once or twice a year. I'd actually like to see you once or twice a year. If I'm lucky, she paused. I don't expect anything that you aren't willing to give. It's just that I realized I really miss having you in my life in a greater capacity, and there's so much I wish I'd been a part of. I won't lie. What happened between us kicked the shit out of my soul.
Gina ran both hands through her hair. Meg's chest ached like she'd been punched.
I was fucked up for a while after that, and I was so angry at you, but also at me. And at us and the world. Ultimately, we did what we thought we had to do, but it still really sucked in a lot of ways. And I acknowledge that I was part of the decision-making process too, she laughed. But it sounded sad. God, it sucked. But here I am, and I'm ready to move past that. I'm tired of skipping over memories when we do contact each other. I'm tired of not talking about what happened, because it prevents us from really talking about things, and it prevents us from getting to know who we've become over the years.
She stopped, looked away again, then back at the camera.
I kept hoping you'd want that, and that you'd bring it up. But knowing you, I had a feeling that you might get that little insecure thing going that you have, and you'd convince yourself that I didn't have the time, the inclination, the need, or whatever else, what with my jet-setting ways. You know you're full of shit for thinking that, right?
She grinned. Meg smiled too.
Well, you are, Gina said. And I'm telling you to quit with that. You're an unbelievably amazing woman, and I have such respect for who you are and what you do. So can we please put the past behind us and be real friends? I miss you, cowgirl. I'm pleading, like on Facebook. Be my friend, huh? Will you?
Meg laughed out loud. I also wanted to let you know that I'm really sorry about what happened with you and Kate. I never met her, but she's fucking crazy to let you go. I know how you can be. You've got to let someone in. I told you that once.
You were pretty good with me up to a point. It didn't keep me from being with you, but it made me wonder.
I figured you'd grow out of it. Have you?
She quirked an eyebrow playfully and Meg swallowed hard.
I really hope you have, she continued. Because someone's going to be the luckiest woman in the world when you're able to let go of some of those walls. Of course, I now need to work on some of mine, too.
A distant expression entered her eyes.
So I'll quit teasing you about that, since I'm probably just as bad these days.
Gina smiled again.
Anyway, I hope you're okay about that. Wish I could be there. You've got my shoulder anytime you need it.
Jesus, Meg muttered. I think I'd want a hell of a lot more than that.
Okay, cowgirl. Here's the other thing I wanted to bring up. Monday is a 10-year anniversary of that night at the River Rest, the anniversary of our first night together. I want you to know that's one of the most precious memories I have, and no matter what you say to me after this or what you think of me in the wake of all this crazy revelation, you will always have a part of me, and for that, I will always be grateful. So, I guess that's about it. Lots of heavy shit to absorb, and I'm sorry for laying this on you, but I needed to say it. Take your time with it. I hope it hasn't made you change your mind about August. Happy birthday, Meg. Take care. The screen faded to black, and Meg closed the file and emailed a thank you to Mary, letting her know that she'd gotten it. Then she sat staring at the monitor and imagined she saw a little demon staring back at her.
Yeah, so? She said to it. I might still be a little in love with her. So what? She thought back to that night at the River Rest, and it was just like it was yesterday, the current that raced down her spine and settled pleasantly between her thighs, Gina singing, "There's your trouble," then following her out onto the patio, kissing Gina for the first time against the side of her Pathfinder in a dark corner of the River Rest parking lot, ending up in Gina's motel room. Meg logged out of her account, mind racing. She hadn't heard Gina's voice in 5 years, but it made heat race through her veins like it had when they were together, watching her talk, seeing the shifting expressions in her eyes. How the hell could she still affect her this way? Even from a damn video. She started to click on it again, but forced herself to log out instead. So that's what Gina wanted. She was tired of avoiding the past. She felt it held them back from a friendship. Meg pushed back from the desk and stood. Gina was right about that. It did. Friendship Meg could do, knowing that she might still be a little in love with Gina, would just have to be her secret. She left the office and went to the bonfire, where she took the empty seat next to Irene on a bench to do some family time, though Gina was more family than Irene would ever be. Meg made small talk with her and Phil, thinking back 10 years to the first week Gina was at the DR, which she spent wondering if Gina would ever see anything in someone like her. The night of her birthday, she got her answer. So why did she push people away? Was it ranch culture? Growing up around Stan, a self-contained man who rarely discussed his deeper feelings, living as a lesbian in a macho world? She stared into the flames, only half hearing Irene going on about some party she had planned over the summer. Phil made some polite comment, but he too was staring into the fire. What a pair, Meg thought as she glanced over at him. He's in love with the future, and I'm hung up on the past. And it amused her a little, what she knew that her mother didn't. She thought about what Stan had said about Irene, and she allowed a little more empathy to sink into her heart for her. She is what she is. I just wish she'd let me be who I am.